We had sometime, a long time ago, started in Galatians, just the introduction to Galatians, and looking at the salutation and comparing it to the other epistles that Paul has written. And they're very, you know, there are a lot of similarities in all of them, and some of them are really close, and some of them are, you know, a little different. You can tell they're very personal. There's some things about them that are pretty standard because it's an introductory letter in the way that they started letters. But also, you know, some of the things that Paul, you know, if they grace to you in peace in verse 3, those kinds of things, very similar for Paul. One of the things here in this letter that is very different from the other letters is Paul doesn't begin with some type of a prayer. It's very common if you just turn over to Ephesians that Paul would begin with his introductory statements, and then in verse 3 he says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us," and he goes through this, what is basically a prayer. And most of his letters begin this way. this one begins, you know, with an address to them, grace to you and peace from God our Father, and statements of who, you know, about God. But then he begins in verse 6 very directly. It's there's not encouragements, there's not exhortations, there's not the prayer. It's just straightforward. And he says, "I am amazed." There's an alarm that he's sounding. "I'm amazed that you are so quickly deserting him who called you by the grace of Christ for a different gospel." that he is shocked. He's amazed that they've deserted, that they've changed courses, that they've traded positions. So this desertion in, you know, I'm sorry, Galatians chapter 1. The idea of deserting, it's used in our language, I mean English, in the sense of sometimes in military for someone that leaves their post. And we would use that term that there's, it wouldn't be so much that one just left something, but you left something that you're responsible for. So you deserted something. So we might use it in that he deserted someone, even in relationships. But by that statement, there would be clearly an implication that there was some responsibility if they deserted. More than, I guess in other terms, if you're talking about your relationships, someone might say they broke up, but that's not implying that there was a responsibility. But when you say they deserted, well, here it's, or it could be in the sense that one changed their position. And that's what he's looking at, that you deserted, that you left something that you had adhered to, something you bought into. We're in Galatians chapter 1 and verse 6. And also he says, so quickly, that there's a kind of a time element here, though I don't know that we should read into that moment, but I guess Paul, would he have been shocked that they would have left the gospel regardless of how long it had been? I would think so. But his amazement is even more so that it's so quickly. We're not given that exact time to know what that timetable is, but he views it as very quick. But notice what he says, that I am amazed that you are so quickly deserting. It's a present thing. It's ongoing. This is what they're doing. It's not so much that you did it. This is the act of what you're doing. that you deserted him who called you by the grace of Christ for a different gospel. Well, there's two things here. One is that they're deserting the person who called you. If somebody said that they, you know, that they had in, you know, kind of had a different view of the gospel, or, you know, you start adding things to the gospel, we would probably tend to argue with them about the content of the gospel, which is what Paul is going to do in part also. But Paul also said that very act means you've deserted the person of Christ. He puts those two so close together. So often we want to make it intellectual, content. But Paul is seeing these right together. We had a friend, and I wish I knew what happened to Debbie. When we were, and I may have mentioned this one other time before or somewhere along the line, but when we were in Dallas, when I was in seminary, Robin went to a conference, and she met this girl at this conference that grew up on the mission field. And she kind of had a different perspective on a lot of things because she didn't grow up in the United States. She grew up on the mission field. And she lived in Fort Worth, and we got to know her pretty well. And she would come over periodically and, you know, maybe spend the weekend at our house or something like that. And so, you know, over the years, a couple of years or so, we got to know Debbie pretty well, and we're, you know, considered her a very good friend. And we knew something of, you know, her life and relationships, and there was this guy that she was, that she knew, and that she had spoken of, but she didn't really have any real interest in him. He wasn't a believer. And at the same time that this was going on, I believe it's Braniff was the, there's not a Braniff anymore, right? So it must have been Braniff. Airlines was going through their, they weren't filing for bankruptcy yet, but they were going through their, centralizing operations. And so as they did that, and Debbie worked for Braniff, they kept moving people to Dallas. Well, every time another group moved to Dallas, her seniority slipped a notch. And, you know, she was getting to the point where she wasn't very protected because there were so many other people had moved here. And she came over, I guess the last time we saw Debbie, she came over one weekend. And after I went to work on that Saturday morning, she was telling Robin that she was getting married to this guy. And Robin said, well, isn't that a problem since he's not a Christian? She said, no, because I'm not one either. And, you know, there was, in my estimation, my, you know, judgment, you know, the financial issues had become, this guy, I didn't mention this guy was pretty wealthy, that the financial issues had become that there was security in this relationship. And, but it was very intriguing the way that she told him, you know, no, it's not an issue because I've rejected Christ now. You know, I've given that up. Now, I don't know what the end of that story is. I don't know if at some point in a matter of, you know, months or years that she came back and embraced the Lord. If the other guy, you know, if the guy became a believer, if they broke up, I don't know. We couldn't ever, you know, after some time, through a mutual acquaintance, we tried to get in touch with her, but never could and never have. But, you know, that's the sense here is, you know, what she saw, you know, she didn't just say, well, you know, I don't, you know, I think everybody's going to heaven, or, you know, I've kind of changed my view about the gospel. You know, he's a good guy. You know, she put it in terms of she's rejected. She's changed on that. At least she saw how personal it was. And so often, you know, people, you know, make it just content. Paul sees it as both. You are deserting him who called you by the grace of Christ. So here's, we're seeing that call. There's a call. He called you, and this call is connected to the grace. So we start seeing things of the gospel, even in Paul's presentation. The gospel, while we can talk about the content of the gospel ultimately cannot be separated from the call of God, and it cannot be separated from the grace of God. So if we talk about the content and turn to 1 Corinthians, and we'd say the gospel is, the message of the gospel is that Christ died for your sins, and he was resurrected. But in that very small capsule of a content, which I think is very accurate. You know, I would say that's the gospel when you're talking about content. What it doesn't include is this broader perspective of the gospel, that it's also tied to a call, and it's also tied to the grace of God. So the gospel, while it can be narrowed down, if you would, into a content, it's very huge at the same time, because it's Jesus died for your sin. Well, who's Jesus? He's the Son of God. What is your sin? How does, you know, the resurrection? I mean, it just keeps growing and growing and growing in that regard. But Paul here says that they've deserted him for a different gospel. Sometimes there's two words, and the other word is used in the next passage, the next verse, where it says, which is really not another. Sometimes there's a lot made out of these two words, where one means different of another kind and different of the same kind, or a second. But at the same time, there's a lot of passages where they're very synonymous. So I don't know if there's that much to be made out of that they're different words. But one of the things that's very clear in the usages is that they're both can be used in that sense of a comparative. And so this first one, as you look at it, it says, for a different gospel, another gospel. As when you compare these two, it's one that's subsequent to it. So Paul is saying, you know, here was the good news that I preached to you that you embraced, and now there's a subsequent good news that you've locked into. But then he moves on from that and he says, which is really not another. So, you know, for it truly to be another good news, it would be kind of like the things we see from time to time, whatever your favorite product is, it's new and improved. You know, it's the thing, only better. But there's not the same gospel, only better. It's different. It's not another of the same kind. It is not the good news. It's actually a fraud. New Coke. We were talking with somebody the other day, you know, like our kids. They grew up with Classic Coke, but the title means nothing to them. You could even wonder sometimes, why do they call it Classic? Now I guess they're more and more just saying Coke too. But why would you call it Classic? I mean, and if you were around when they came out with New Coke, you understand. We kind of wonder what happened to those executives too. Anybody could have convinced the whole company to change to, and then at least they admitted their mistake quickly. And it evidently was a huge mistake. So it's really not another. Only there are some who are disturbing you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. So it's really not another good news, but on the other hand, there's somebody out there that's disturbing you. There's somebody out there that's causing this agitation. Now, disturbing in the sense of, I might say, I'm disturbed about something means I'm alarmed. Well, that's obviously not what he's saying there. They're not disturbing in the sense that they're alarmed, but they're causing agitation in them. Disturbing in the sense of disrupting, even though maybe they don't realize the disruption. Disturbing you in that they are offering a different gospel. They're distorting the gospel. So as we'll get into it, it's like, the gospel, how's it distorted? You can come up with a totally different aspect of, how one approaches God that doesn't even touch on the gospel, the Christian gospel. You just leave it alone and you just talk about other things that, you get to God through that path, whatever that might be. You just totally ignore the gospel. So that doesn't seem to be the case here. They're distorting the gospel. They're talking about the good news, but there's something different. Most likely here, it's not that they're saying, well, Christ really didn't die for your sins, or you know, this or that. It's not that. It's here's the gospel, but you also have to. It's that Judaizers that are coming in with this history that they bring with them of zealousness for God in that way of that. The way we approach God is we have to be righteous. And so here comes the good news, the gospel, but I've got to add to it. I've got to somehow prove myself. It was in seminary. I worked at the state fair at this evangelism booth a few years at the state fair. And the track, I really liked their little track that they use. As you went through with somebody, you know, you have your introductory kinds of things to get into it. And you go through, start going through this track. And one of the questions early on in it said, or at some point as you got through it, it says, or maybe it's at the very beginning, I guess, it's, what are you trusting to get to heaven, or however it's worded? And it gives you these things, and it's set up to where you can write it in a kind of like a percent. And so people, you know, good works, or, you know, whatever's down there, you know, singing in the choir, going to church, I'm not sure all the list of things, but you put down. And so you'd get these people that, you know, maybe it's, you know, 100% because I live a good life. Then you go through the gospel. You go through all the little passages and you read it. And then here comes the same questions again. And you get to that point and it's 50% trust in Christ and 50% good works or going to church or teaching Sunday school, whatever it is. You know, you go, well, it didn't quite work. Let's go through again. It's the only track I've ever seen like that. But that's, I think, what's going on here. It's a distortion of the gospel in that you start adding to it. We're in Galatians 1. You're adding to the gospel. And people, you know, we recognize that pretty well today, you know, in evangelical circles in that sense of adding the gospel. Of recent years, what's probably been the most controversial thing related to this within evangelical circles? And it's probably, you really, to be hot, you'd have to go back about 20 years where it was really big news. Lordship salvation. You don't hardly hear, you know, I don't know if you ever hear that term anymore. I think it's kind of settled down. I think a lot of it was overstated. I think there were a lot of semantics in it. I think a lot of the people that were on, you know, the lordship side, you know, I read them and they're very clear on the gospel, you know, but yet sometimes there'll be things. And I never read MacArthur's book. I read a review on it, and the reviewer said that, a very lengthy review, and the reviewer said that MacArthur makes these very strong statements in his text, and then in the footnotes backs away from them. So I don't know. I didn't ever read his book. But there's something tied there about living your life for Christ. And if you press that, then you definitely could get into this good works. But at the same time, they were never saying straight out that you have to, you know, do good works to be saved. It's not Christ and good works, but it led to some, you know, a lot of several publications and you know, a lot of arguments, a lot of debates that went on, and even one organization that was founded just because of this, you know, attacking that position. But I think in that sense of gospel, that really is the issue. Are you distorting the gospel? Are you adding to the gospel so long that now it's not what Christ has done for us, but it's how I have to do something, how I have to add to it, how I have to earn it, how I have to deserve it. And that's somewhat what they've done. Paul moves on from there and he says, but even if we or an angel from heaven should preach you a gospel contrary to what we have preached to you, he is to be accursed. Now that is a strong statement. I mean, you think about the people that you've heard at various times that change their positions. And we change our positions on things. And sometimes it's You know, I remember hearing Theme one time, you know, saying that. Oh, somebody would come up to him and say, well, I've got my notes, you know, from last time you were here, and it said this. And he'd say, you know, ever, I don't know what his year was. You know, he always had all this kind of stuff you ever listened to him. But it was ever like, every 5 years, you ought to throw your Bible away anyway, you know, talking about the notes. And because I've studied since then, you know. So we are going to change on our views and interpretation of various things. Because we learn, we, you know, are more experienced, whatever. So I don't think we ought to be in a position that, you know, we can never change on how we view things. But when you come to something that is so important, you say, if I were to change on that, I should be cursed by God. That's, you know, you're not sitting there saying, well, you know, I've studied since then. You know, before you make that statement, you better be pretty sure you've studied all you're going to study. And that Paul is making this strong. Even if an angelic messenger, and here he's not talking about like demons or, you know, if something came in, you know, this isn't a positive light. So if Gabriel himself showed up and gave you a message that's contrary to what I told you before, hey, he shouldn't be going back to heaven. I mean, Paul is extremely strong here. You know, I think with some with the Lordship salvation, they took this attitude and you know, and anybody that didn't agree exactly, that they just said they should be, and they were accursed, you know. I think we have to be careful of that. On what are we really, you know, have they really distorted the gospel? Or are we into some semantics and different things? But when people really distort the gospel, when you're adding to the gospel, when you're saying, well, yes, I believe that Christ died for my sins, but I have to do this to add to it. You know, his work is not totally sufficient. I've got to do this. When you're adding things like that, when you're, I've got to be circumcised, I've got to be this, whatever it was with Judah, then it's different. It's no longer the gospel. It's no longer what he's provided. It's how I can achieve. When I was in college, I joined this fraternity, and I, you know, kind of from what I've heard, I think all fraternities somewhat are the same in this, well, probably are the same in a lot of regards, but in their initiation is that there's something, some kind of test that's set up, and it's designed that you have to fail that test. And you know, and part of what they do is, or, you know, is they keep you up for a long time, and so you're so tired you can't think clearly and all this, and then it's set up and you have to fail it. And then it's kind of interesting, even, you know, a pagan fraternity, how there can be certain ideals that are very Christian, because this one, you know, basically comes this idea of grace that you're, you know, forgiven, overlooked or whatever, because you could, you know, you couldn't pass it or whatever. But it, when I was going through mine, there was, the, you know, it had to do with this lamp that was burning or something. But anyway, the lamp was burning, getting out of oil. And so it was going to go out. And so it goofed up kind of what the people, and they felt like they had to kind of speed things up because they're going. But I remember the whole time thinking, if I have long enough, I can figure this out. Now, that's very too much of a high estimation of your own abilities, especially for me, for my abilities. But it's that thought, see? Now, what was going to happen there was going to be a failure and then a gift. But my thought is, I can figure it out. I can work toward it. I can accomplish this. Well, see, that's how we, with God, you know, it's, sometimes it's almost like we're climbing and you know, and you're going along and do you need help? No. Do you need help? No. Do you need help? Well, maybe just a little bit. And, you know, and if we can look at God and say, I need a little bit of help. An evangelist in Dallas, Larry Moyer, and he taught at the Dallas Seminary in his examples, his illustrations for presenting the gospel. One of the ones he'd use is this idea of falling short of the glory of God would be to, you know, when you're talking to somebody to find out, you know, where they're from, you know, where'd you grow up or something, you know, and so, you know, so, you know, talking to Penny and say, you know, and she says, well, you know, live out at, it's not Owosso, what's that, Collinsville, thank you. I knew it was a C. I was going to clear more in this wrong direction. But Collinsville, and so you say, well, you know, if I was to take a rock and you were to take a rock and we'd both throw it towards Collinsville, neither one of us would get the rock there. You know, you might throw it further than me. He said, never pick one like that because you'll get somebody that's there going, well, you know, I think I could do it. And, but now, you know, you come up with somebody else, you know, with Rob, and you pick out St. Louis, and, you know, then it becomes, but it's interesting, you know, he was saying if you get it too close, people, they're so arrogant. You know, but that's the deal. You know, you think about swimming to England. Well, you go to the Atlantic and start swimming. Well, you may be able to swim a lot further than I do, but neither one of us is going to make it. You know, that's helplessness. But when you see it within reach, can you climb over this wall? Well, you know, if I had just a little help, I think I could. And that's where the gospel gets distorted. When we start thinking, if we just could add a little bit. And Paul says, if anybody gives a different gospel, they're to be accursed. As we have said before, so again now, if any man is preaching to you a gospel contrary to what you received, he is to be accursed. So he restates it very close. Now, notice, they have received this gospel. He's, you know, restating what he's already said, you know, that same gospel again. Am I now seeking the favor of men or of God? Or am I striving to please men? If I were still trying to please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. You know, that's where it comes at. You know, are you out here trying to gain favor? And if so, you're going to say things a certain way. And that's not Paul. I'm not about pleasing men. And if I were, then I wouldn't be God's servant. But on the other hand, when you're trying to please people, a lot of times you'll start seeing distortions come in. Because, you know, those groups are important. Well, this is Paul's where he's going. He'll go from here to defend his gospel that he preached and then move on. As we look through this, we probably do not have as much of an issue in our immediate settings. I mean, we know it's out there with distorted gospels. But we do often within evangelicals have this same concept as it relates to not justification, but sanctification. So it's not so much how you get saved, but we start seeing this, how you live your Christian life, that it no longer comes by grace. It becomes, I have to earn things. And so that's where we get into a lot of rules and regulations, legalisms. So that's where Paul goes in Galatians, or where we'll try to follow along there. Well, any thoughts, insights, questions? I don't think so. That you've got to appease God, please God, deserve some in some way. And that makes Christianity not, you know, in one sense, it's not palatable to people because it takes everything away. You know, you have to be at a point where you say, you know, I cannot make it. And the other, you know, is a little different in that regard. Or greatly different, but. Oh, yeah. And, you know, our sense of independence is, you know, can carry over in lots of ways. And, I mean, there's positive things. I mean, it's not like we shouldn't be. I mean, there's positive things about independence, you know. I mean, depending on what you mean by independence. But there are places where it really hurts people, too, where they. Yeah, that. Mm-hmm. Well, at some, yeah. Now that's an interesting. You know, what's interesting with that, and you know, and I don't know, you know, with all people, but you know, is the person, you know, the African mother that couldn't receive rain, is holding her dead kid. Does she have a problem with God as much as somebody, you know, the intellectual looking at it, which is interesting. I don't know. I mean, I think there are different things. At some level, and that's where we're talking about the gospel earlier before we came in a minute, some level, the content, we can say this is the content of the gospel, but it gets larger than that. Just as Paul, in this passage, talked about the call of God and the grace of God. So, you know, when we use 1 Corinthians 15 for the content of the gospel, it's just Christ died for sins and he was resurrected. But there's a lot more. Ryrie, we had to write a deal on, or talk about some things on the gospel, you know, and you know what is it you have to believe to be saved? And you get into situations, and what is it you have to believe? the setting he gave us, you come up on a car wreck, and there's a guy there. He's conscious. But because of the injuries, it's obvious to you and obvious to him, he is going to die. But at this moment, he's still conscious and functioning. So this is a place where you need a concise gospel. What is the essential thing? I think my water's still up here. That you have to say,
nope,
I got it. I remember it now, unfortunately. What is it you have to say that he has to believe? And which is really interesting. And then later, I met a guy that actually happened to. He actually came upon a car wreck, and it was that situation. The guy died, you know, and they were able to fight for it. But the thing that Ryrie is talking about was there's a difference between what you have to believe and rejecting something. You know, for instance, do you have to believe that Jesus is God? I don't know that you do. Can you reject that Jesus is God? That's a different issue. So I think those are some of the things you get into with that. You know, at this point, you start saying, I reject God, or that God is loving. He may be all-powerful, but he's not loving because he couldn't. You know, and you start getting into these kind of concepts, and you start distorting, if you would, a broader sense of the gospel, because you're distorting who the God is behind the gospel. So I think in that regard we do that, and, you know. So is this the gospel, that the small part that you have to believe? You know, I don't think you need to. You know, do you have to tell somebody about the virgin birth before they become a Christian? But rejecting the virgin birth, which is rejecting Jesus as human, rejecting Jesus as God, and then that's, you know, you get into other things. So I think in some broad sense, there are people that struggle with other things as far as what they struggle with. But in a situation, I think Paul was very much talking about Judaizers, but, you know, give your illustration. Here's somebody that preaches the gospel and whatever confronts him in life. And so now he changes the gospel to be more inclusive or whatever. You know, it's still that sense of distorting the gospel, though it wouldn't be exactly what Paul was talking about, but it would be the same purposes or same principle that, you know, and maybe in that sense of what Paul was saying here, am I trying to find favor with man? And, you know, when we sit here and say sometimes, you know, I don't know how I can reconcile this in front of people, you really have to deal with the fact, am I trying to find favor with man in this? You know, and maybe not in his situation, but maybe so. So it makes it for an interesting thing. But the gospel, I mean, I think it's one of these things that it was real helpful for me. I know we've talked about this on several different places in church the last few years, but it was really helpful to me at a point where I was challenged in what are the essential things you believe? You know, what are the critical absolutes? What are those kind of important things? You know, do you make any distinctions in your beliefs? And at that point, I didn't. I never thought about it. And then you go, wait a minute, there are a lot of things you ought to be making distinctions in. And for Paul, in the gospel, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that he also felt that way about, you know, God and so forth. But the gospel is just, it's not debatable for Paul. It's not up for debate. It's not, I can kind of go this way. I got a little wobble room. It's, nope, this is it right here. And so as we know, you know, the situation here is this confrontation with Peter. that he's, yeah. Well, are there prayer requests?